You are now tuning in to Let's Be Honest with host Just Jonda. Hello, and welcome to Let's Be Honest with Just Jonda. Today starts our two-part series on the Democratic National Convention. DNC 2020, Nights 1 and 2, The Gloves Are Off. Well, I must say right at the outset that the producers, directors, the planners for this convention are worth their weight in gold. Democrats, don't let them go, because the first two nights, the execution, how it was put together, the individuals they brought in, the focus on unity and inclusiveness, and how that was used to convey the message, and more importantly, to convey the message that the party wants to get across, which is not just, if you're paying attention closely, which is not just the glossy picture of we're unified, we're diverse, but actually within that, having the individuals who are chosen speak directly to the platform, speak directly to now nominee, because it's official now, now Democratic nominee, Vice President Joe Biden's actual initiatives and the things that, of course, he's going to talk about a bit more fully on Thursday, but we are introduced to those things through people who are strategically placed to hit those points because they basically fall under that person's umbrella. It was masterfully done to have people who would have an actual reason to care about specific issues be a part of the process, whether those individuals are the hosts, like on Monday night, actress Eva Longoria, who we know is always very involved. In fact, she played this same role to a certain degree in terms of giving a speech. She wasn't the host the entire time. If I recall, that was Elizabeth Banks, but she certainly addressed the party. I believe it may have even been night one, just as she hosted on this night. So that was great. And then following that up last night with Tracee Ellis Ross, who of course could speak not only as a host, and she's always a gracious host. She's good at what she does. I mean, she's pretty much the go-to host for most things right now because she's likable. She's intelligent. She's brown educated. She is just good at what she does, and she's very engaging. And you add that to the fact that she could actually speak to issues about the cross-sectionality of being Black and a woman. And she has a wide appeal to both sides of that. And then on top of it, she is biracial as well. So again, just well done in its overall presentation. So let's get to the specifics. So Monday night was a pretty big night. I mean, there's marquee nights in all of this, but Monday night, they brought out heavy hitters right away. There was no slow build up to letting America know that the Democratic Party is coming out swinging and swinging hard. So of course, in the first hour, you got a lot of the feel-good stuff because we're just starting, right? So you've got people starting with the singing of America the Beautiful. Did they do America the Beautiful? Yes, I think they did. I could be mistaken. They definitely did the Star Spangled Banner. I remember that specifically. But then you had the reciting of the Constitution, which was awesome because, again, they went around the country with people from all walks of life giving a line. I recall, and I'm pretty sure because it went very fast, seeing our own Danica Rome from here in Northern Virginia, who is the first transgender person who was elected to our Virginia House of Delegates. And Danica's been a superstar, certainly in the Democratic Party here in Virginia, but getting national attention as well. So you had that piece, which was awesome. A really hard-hitting piece that I remember tweeting and talking about on Facebook that was, again, so well done, is when they actually had Republicans, some average folks like us, and then some that are prominent, even if they're older or not exactly in the mix, but names we know. And for me, being a Jersey girl, seeing Christine Todd Whitman, who quite frankly was a very popular governor. Yes, she was Republican, but I was a big fan of her myself, being as a part of a family of lifelong Democrats and a Democrat myself. She was never really one of those, she was never really over the top hardcore, certainly the way that we see some of the Republican Party going now. She definitely wouldn't have qualified for the Tea Party, but she was a good governor. She was well respected. I remember meeting her when I was in college at Douglas College at Rutgers, and she was a favorite there. So was Ann Richards, who we'll talk about a little later. But just seeing her, and then John Kasich, who came on, and John Kasich, I'm sorry, I said his name wrong, former governor of Ohio. And again, another very popular figure in Ohio and a candidate for the Republican nomination for president himself, up against Donald Trump and the 5011 people who ran in 2016. So that was just so well done. Then we followed that up with America's governor right now, Governor Andrew Cuomo, who is always great. He is, I don't think that we can say he's New York's governor anymore, right? He's the governor that we all go to watch his daily press conferences. I know that I do. So that was a great one. And before I go on, I'm just going to say, as far as I'm concerned, this was Hearts and Passions night, right? I mean, it really came on strong, but in a good way. So they followed that up with some jabs, believe it or not, from Senator Amy Klobuchar, who was also a candidate for this nomination. She was a candidate up until about, I guess, now 6-7 months ago. And of course, I don't think we're ever going to forget her line, at least most of us didn't. I jumped up and said, "That's a read," when she said, "The president may hate the post office, but he's still gonna have to send them a change of address card come January." She was so proud of that line that I truly felt and like she paused for a second to let it land and then remembered, wait a minute, this is all virtual. I don't have the people to fall out in the aisles the way that we would have if we were there in person. Because I tell you what, if this thing were happening, come hell or high water, I would have been there. Because I was there in Philadelphia in 2016. And after going to one political convention, I will never miss another one again if I could help it. It is just unlike any experience that I can even describe adequately without you being there. Amazing, amazing. I may even talk about it another time. Next speaker highlight, Senator Bernie Sanders, who also ran, as we know, one of the last to come out, and also, as we'll get into when I recap Tuesday, talked about, or Tuesday, also known as day two, was also nominated. And I'm going to get into explaining that a bit more, because I know that because people don't read or pay attention in civics and all of those other things, there was some confusion as to why individuals got up to nominate him. And it turned into a bit of messiness for Representative Ocasio-Cortez, but we'll talk about that more in a moment. So, I'm sorry, Senator Bernie Sanders was great because you got that Bernie passion, but he really came through, in my opinion, in speaking strongly about why President Trump has to come out of this office. It was clear, and he made it clear, and made his case, even if it wasn't him, because we don't expect, at least I don't, if someone is being truly genuine, that they are going to get up there. Certainly not someone who fought as hard and as long as Representative Sanders and the base of individuals that he has. I don't expect him to get up there and say, this person is a better person for this job than me. Now, given his age, do I expect him to run again? Probably not. But I still don't expect that, even though he may not run again, that he would concede this time either. He is up there showing his support, if for nothing else, then something different, something better, an individual who he feels that he and others can work with to make things happen in the face of who and what we have going on now. So I thought that that was very well done, and it was very much in keeping with who Senator Sanders is, because whether you agree with him or not, it is hard to look at him and listen to him and not feel that he is a principled individual who truly believes that what he is fighting for is best for most of the people in this country. And it is where this country needs to go, whether it's healthcare, minimum wage, etc. He's not bullshitting when it comes to how he feels about those things, and will go down in flames, if possible, fighting for them. Not if possible. We don't want him to believe that's possible, but go down in flames if necessary to fight for them. So I felt that it was very in keeping in what he in who and what he was, and who and what he is. Finally, the big name on the marquee, FLOTUS forever, in my opinion, former First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama. This was, as most commentators have said, so I won't beat it to death, this was a Michelle Obama on a mission. Not that she always hasn't been, because again, she is another person who, part of her appeal is her clear and sincere compassion and belief for causes, and the causes that she promotes and represents, whether it is the health of our children or just standing solidly behind the policies and beliefs of her husband, former President Barack Obama. So this was definitely a moment that many of us were looking for, because what we enjoy and we love Michelle Obama, but at the same time, we were like, okay, what is she going to say? Now, she started out talking about some of the things that we expect. America's children, because she was America's mom for 8 years, and a mom we actually like. And she talked about what they were seeing, but she did it in a vastly different way than what we are used to seeing before. She did not come out with hearts and flowers about how great it is. She didn't launch into an, I believe the children are our future. She didn't do any of that. She came out and told you that our children are living in a time where they are seeing a United States that is mired in muck. A United States that nobody should ever want our children to see. Everything from the attitudes that we have towards one another, the attitudes of our leadership towards its citizens, other countries, sickness, death. It was a very bleak picture that she painted, but one that I don't think any of us can say was exaggerated. And she started out saying it from the standpoint that our kids are seeing it. One of her key quotes was, kids in this country are seeing what happens when we stop requiring empathy in one another. They see our leaders labeling fellow citizens as enemies of the state while emboldening torch-bearing white supremacists. So she did not mince words when it came to that. And when she got to the end, she just let us know flat out, look, I may not have been the president, but I was there. I was in the White House. I saw what this job took. And I'm telling you that that person that you have in there is not the one. He can't handle it. He had his chance and he's showing you that he can't do it. So if you want the real, here is the real. If you are one of the people who like me, trust me, believe that I am that person who, if nobody else up here is going to tell you that I'm going to tell you the truth, I'm going to tell you. And then she did one of those patented moves that I have to just give to my sisters. And I, again, even said this on my page, that when a Black woman locks her hands together in the prayer position and points it at you, that's worse than, I'm telling you, you don't want that happening. You don't want that happening if from your mother, your grandmother, or auntie, or FLOTUS Michelle Obama, any more than you want somebody coming at you with a bullet. That is not something that you want. And when she did it, she told us, right? So let me be as clear as I possibly can. Donald Trump is the wrong president for our country. He has had more than enough time to prove that he can do the job, but he is clearly in over his head. He cannot meet this moment. He simply cannot be what we need him to be for us. It is what it is. Period. Now, she went on and gave and said some more wonderful things, but you want to talk about a drop the mic moment? That is a moment that will live in infamy. And on top of that, that it is what it is, again, that's something that is a colloquialism that many of us use, but in this particular case, this is something that our current occupant of the White House said as it relates to the deaths of individuals from COVID. And she turned it around right back on him. The fact that you're inept, the fact that you are not the person who can rise to this job, to this nation, to this moment. Well, if we're going to talk about it is what it is, that is what it is as well. And I'll be right back. Welcome back. Night two, again, equally well thought out and put together. And another thing that was really great about night two that goes along with what I talked about earlier in terms of how it was executed in a way to also lay out the platform in small doses from different people, so you didn't feel like there was just one person droning on and on preaching to you about we're going to do this, we're going to do that. No, you had different people who connected with those different aspects of the platform, speaking about it in a way that made it palatable because it was something that was obviously meaningful to them. Again, starting with Tracee Ellis Ross and her connection to being a woman, being a Black woman in particular, and the place of crisis that our country has found ourselves in. A crisis that really we've been in for quite some time, but not everybody recognized it as a crisis, right? So, night two, the theme was Uniting America. Made perfect sense, again, because night two was also going to be the night of the official roll call that leads up to the big moment of the nomination. So to have your theme be Uniting America, making sure that in expressing that theme, you showed a crossing of races and cultures and religions to go through the nominating process from state to state. We saw wonderful displays from the Sioux Indians and from some of our outlying territories, American territories like Guam and America Samoa and the U.S. Virgin Islands. We saw displays that you don't typically get to see when they're all in a room together and the roll call is done and somebody runs up to the mic and says, I'm representing the state of, and we're giving this many, we're pledging this many delegates to this person and that many delegates to that person. It is still one of the coolest things ever, more so if you're there. But if nothing else that was gained by this, this gave an opportunity for individuals to actually take a breath, speak for a moment about something that was important to their area of the country, and certainly as we know that that's going to tie into the platform, right? And depending on where they were, to even show off a bit of the local culture, which is why I mentioned the two in particular earlier, which was amazing. You also got to see some of different generations of leadership. And in doing that, before you know it, you went around the entire country. There were literally 57 demonstrations that, by the way, were impressively done within an hour, actually slightly under an hour. And I had a 13-year-old who will tell you in a minute, she's not interested in politics, but actually sat there and watched, and we had discussions about the things and people that she was seeing, because it was a wonderful picture of people from all over the country, what they look like, what they sound like, what's important to them. You had the auto industry in one area. You had just, it was so neat having a conversation even about the simple things, because they don't know. Talking about, well, why did Delaware pass? And me being able to say to her, because thankfully I knew, no, Delaware's going to come back and be last because that's his home. So of course they want to be the last ones to speak. And so, and make the motion or be a part of the motion making process. So that was just so well done and well executed. And when they first started, I was like, ooh, this is gonna be long and boring, but again, it really didn't take very long. I think they were maybe 7 or 8 states in when we were like, okay, what do we think so-and-so is gonna say from, you know, so-and-so as in the next state. So very cool. Now I'm gonna go back a second, something that I skipped here in my notes. Even though that whole thing made us feel warm and fuzzy and connected to our fellow citizens, I'm not going to pretend that they went easy tonight. Or, well, yeah, tonight. They were talking about uniting America, and everything that they did seemed to underscore that, but there was no shortage whatsoever of going very hard, for want of a better way of putting it. I mean, let's say the way that we say it, going hard, okay, on why this party, this candidate in particular, would make a better president than our current leadership. They made sure that there was continual and consistent reference to strong leadership, steady leadership. Yes, inclusion was important, but they started out talking about the fact that this is a different kind of America. And while it may have sounded negative, because it was, it did not make me feel like, oh, this is just one big negative campaign ad. No, I didn't feel that way because I knew what was coming. I knew what it was leading up to. It was leading up to the point, and they didn't dwell on it very long, which was a good thing. They led up to the point where they were saying, if you need something different, this is what it's going to be. When you are in a situation where someone, as it was stated, shows no responsibility, no leadership, no plan, and is looking out for himself, these were words that were used, you need something different. And this is not, and what they showed is, this is not just something on the national level. These things happen on the state and the local level, and then you end up with people who may be considered to be unlikely leaders to rise up. And through that, of course, no one feels that Joseph Biden is an unlikely leader. We know that, and he's been in politics for longer than many people have been alive. But it led up to a great segment as well on a new generation of leaders, showing individuals from around the country, and again, in speaking about how they are the new generation of leaders, the individual from Philadelphia, Alabama, Florida, the person who is the head of, I believe, the Commission of Agriculture, the Hispanic woman. I mean, just all over the country showing this new generation of leadership. And I love something that they also said is, that's a big effing deal. And it is, that these people are in this place now. And again, still with that new generation of leadership, they continued the ongoing discussion about specifics in the platform of what a hopefully, and hopefully for the Democrats, President Biden would do. So these things are not going to sound unfamiliar when you hear them from the VP nominee, Kamala Harris. They're not going to sound unfamiliar when former President Obama speaks tonight about, well, I'm sorry, speaks tomorrow, which is Wednesday, about the fact that he has worked with Joe Biden and has seen him as a leader and how he depended on him and being trustworthy and all of these things. These are not going to be new themes from these people. It is more a driving home of what you have already heard about them, so that when they speak, because there is a method to the madness, it's not just to be repetitive. It is so that when those individuals speak, they can spend a little bit more time connecting or attempting to connect with you. Because when you hear the nominee speeches, they're going to be much longer than what you have gotten. So I'm just going to warn you. They're going to be much longer than what you have gotten over night one and night two, especially in this sort of borderline soundbite type way, because of the fact that these things are pre-recorded. But because they are the presumptive VP nominee and now presidential nominee, you are going to hear speeches that are a lot longer. Not as long as the State of the Union address, but at least about 25 minutes or more. So, you had some marquee hits last night as well. There was Tracy Ellis Ross. There was Sally Yates, the former Attorney General, who went so far as to, again, just laid it on the line to say that President Trump treats our country like his family business, bankrupting our moral authority at home and abroad. I'm telling you, the people who wrote these speeches or helped to write these speeches, whatever, worth your weight in gold. And if you wrote it yourself, God bless you, fabulous. You also had former President Bill Clinton, who came and he spoke to us in his very Bill Clinton personal way. I had some debate back and forth with some folks on Facebook who talked about, well, why is he here? You know, the Epstein thing, and just, you know, taking a different look at his presidency from the standpoint of history. And yes, it is always going to be different looking at someone's presidency from the standpoint of history. And I'm not saying this to advocate for his presence one way or the other. I will simply say the same thing that I will say to anybody else who says this is him, having him there is tone deaf and whatever. President Clinton puts in the time, the effort, and the money, the time and the effort and the mileage to raise money for the party. He is still a sought-after guest in some circles, even if they are not yours, and those circles write checks. So as long as he is a living former president that still brings in donation dollars, he is going to have a seat at the table. Will he be involved in policy decisions or anything like that? Probably not. But is he going to have a seat at the, we'll say the convention table? I'm not saying the table at as far as him sitting there when decisions are made in the situation room. But are we going to continue to see him at events? As long as checks are written, you damn skipping. So, back to his speech, which was a good speech, by the way. And engaging as he always is. Voice is a little lighter, but he's a lot older. When he talked about, did things have to happen this way? Did we have to be in that, in the place we are in now? And he gave the answer, no. Is he making that up? Absolutely not. You can say all day long, and we can agree to disagree about which president left the next president the worst load to carry and the biggest pile of crap to wade through. Sure, it happens. But where we are now in terms of our ability to relate to the rest of the world, where we are now, because I know there's a lot of talk about COVID. Okay, let's put that on the shelf for a second. Where we are now in terms of foreign policy, where we are now in terms of the lack of respect for our leadership, both at home and abroad, where we are now in terms of questions about the stability of our intelligence services, because they are questioned openly by our president, our commander in chief. The revolving doors on officials who need to deal with very important institutions. Institutions that should not be shaken. Where we are now, when we talk about things as simple as the freaking mail, or individuals who have positions that, I mean, I'm actually being nice to say they're not suited for, because I think we can use even stronger words for individuals like Ben Carson and Betsy DeVos. Those things are real issues and real concerns. And the question again, did it have to be this way? No. Should the Oval Office be a command center instead of a storm center mired in chaos? Absolutely. Is it possible that that could happen under any president? Absolutely. But how much confidence do most people have that this president couldn't make it less chaotic? Or in the inverse, how many people believe that this president contributes to the chaos? Hell, his tweets are scary. Finally, we get to the big moment of the nominations. And for those of you who may not know by now, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you probably do. Senator Bernie Sanders was nominated by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez because, well, not because she was getting up there to make some bold statement against the party, the way some people try to put it out, the way individuals like actor Isaiah Washington, who seems to be losing his mind on Twitter and Instagram, seems to be saying. It has absolutely nothing to do with that. She's not trying to be a socialist. She's not trying to do anything. Even NBC got it wrong, which, come on, guys. Do you not have anybody working there? He's nominated because he has delegates, and not a little bit of delegates. He has several hundred delegates. So, of course, he is nominated. Now, who gets the nomination? Obviously, the person who has the most, but it is a part of the procedure. Why would, okay, the average American citizen, maybe not knowing that. My 13-year-old, maybe not knowing that. But commentators and people on the, oh, forget it. Oh, and let's not even get into the internet gangsters and the Facebook mafia who's like, oh my God, you see what she did? Yeah, she followed procedure. Next. Anywho. So, of course, Heavy Days Are Here Again. You know, the music playing in the background. And you saw VP Joe Biden and his wife and kids and, well, his grandkids mostly. And they are all excited. So then finally we have our moment with the potential first lady, Dr. Jill Biden. Compelling family story all the way around. When you again get more information about how their story came to be, because it is part of the backdrop to his, a family tragedy, him being a widower, and ultimately meeting a very beautiful and young looking Jill Biden, who really looked like she could have been. I'm looking at the pictures and I'm like, okay, so are these pictures of her at Woodstock? Looks like she could have been a member of the Mamas and the Papas. I mean, just very lovely pictures, beautiful woman. And they go through her history with her family and needless to say, how she became a part of the Biden family and her commitment to their boys and ultimately to their daughter together. And just what the family has given through. She gave more color and a more rounded picture to the understanding that this family is just like you and not in the normal, oh, I was raised here and I come from humble beginnings way, but in a way that, especially given what's going on in the country right now, that resonates in its own way, particularly the understanding of family struggles through illness and unspeakable tragedies compounded one upon the other, and the resilience of that, and leadership within the family as well as with others. It also gave more color, even once she even before she spoke, to the man who we saw vignettes earlier of him being one to reach across the aisle. In fact, it worked very well with the video vignette and voiceover from Mrs. McCain, John McCain's wife. And as we know, John McCain being quite a beloved figure, and another person who, despite his actual party affiliation, was known as someone who, again, reached across the aisles. And that showed in the respect that he garnered from individuals, both at when he was living and even in his death, and the individuals who came out to celebrate him and all of that. So that I also felt went very well and folded right into the piece with Jill Biden. And then ultimately her speech, which, I mean, we don't expect anything less from Jill Biden in terms of her giving a good speech. She actually does actively go on the road with Joe Biden and speaks all the time. What I appreciated about her speech, and it seemed that from what I saw and many commentators seemed to appreciate and take away from her speech, is again, someone speaking from where they are in terms of, this is the man I know, I know that he will do these things or try to do these things because they mean something to us. He believes in them. It's not just this rah-rah, we are the best American family, but this is what he believes. And this is why, because of what our family has gone through and what we have lived through and what I have seen with the number of individuals that he gives his phone number to and tries to do things on the behalf of. Also, once again, similar to the night before with Michelle Obama, she also spoke again from a place that people can understand on a different level in terms of what she does, being a teacher, and again, tying that into where we are now as a country, tying that into where parents are, making it clear that nobody thinks that it's okay that kids aren't home, that kids aren't able to go to school. Reminding us that she's a teacher and she gets that. She gets it from the parenting perspective and the teaching perspective, because that is a real deal issue. Not this lofty stuff, not foreign affairs, not whether or not they're going to pass some new bill about this or that. This is something that touches us every single day. And this is something that, while it's talked about in political circles for regular people, it's not political. It is fairly cut and dry about whether or not you feel that your kids are getting the best that they could possibly be getting looking at a computer versus being in the classroom. It's something that I have said to people many, many times. For those of us who felt that the safety is best served by us having virtual learning, I've never said that that is the best way. And I'm hard pressed to find anybody who says that that's the best way. We need them to be safe and healthy. We need our teachers to be safe and healthy. We need us to be safe and healthy, so that we can continue to move forward and recover the economy and take care of our children and. So again, I thought very well done, and a great job, like Michelle Obama, of speaking from a perspective that we understood, but still managing to bring it right back home to, and this is why you want my dude instead of that dude. Because all of these things that you want and you feel and you see and I get can't be done with that dude. I'll be right back with your closing. I'm back. This is Just Jonda. Just going to give you the update of what's coming up. So tonight is a big marquee night. Of course, we're going to get other speakers in all kinds of pomp and circumstance, because this has been quite the show so far. So I don't expect that to slow down. But your marquee speakers tonight, I'm personally calling it Black Night, but I'm saying that for me in a good way. We will hear from former President Obama and from VP nominee Kamala Harris. So it should be quite an exciting night. I am pretty much inclined to put on a shirt and go full on early 90s militant. I might even do Public Enemy NWA. I don't know. Don't be surprised if you see something from me on Twitter, Facebook, or something just reminding you that I am black, blacker than black, blackety black tonight for sure. But all jokes aside, It should be a pretty exciting night. I can't imagine that as high as the numbers were for Michelle Obama's speech on Monday, this is going to be a pretty well watched night. It'll be interesting to see how they put it together. If history serves, it will probably be President Obama immediately before her, kind of almost like an intro type thing. So we'll see, but it will be very interesting. What I'm excited to see is the history of Kamala Harris being available for everyone. And when I say that, just seeing about her upbringing, her background, where she's coming from, and again, to get, as I always call it, a little more color to your picture of this person, much in the same way that we got of Joe Biden last night, immediately preceding Jill's speech. So I'm looking forward to that because this is historic and you want to know about someone who's making history. I certainly want to know. I want my daughter to know. And it's just an interesting time, and I'm just looking forward to a well-done presentation. And then of course we know tomorrow night, aside from all the balloons, well, what happens right before the balloons come down? We will finally hear the speech from the actual nominee, Vice President Joe Biden himself. So still lots coming up, and I will be watching, excited and taking notes and looking forward to part two of my conversation with you regarding DNC 2020. As always, I thank you all for listening and hanging out with me. I hope you hung in to the end so that you at least got to hear this. Thank you very much. And remember, you can always reach me in my DMs or just tweet me. Or you can reach me on Instagram. I'm there a lot. You see all of the ways to get in touch with me and to connect with me on a regular basis via Fashion and Drama Diaries. All of that is in the info section. And if you're thinking about it and you want to talk about it, I'm probably thinking about it and want to talk about it with you. So let's be honest together. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and give me those 5 stars on iTunes. Talk to you soon.